Accession number 30271, Reel 12.
Leading aircraftsman Walker, Reel 12. Now, another thing you mentioned was that some of your colleagues were able to go over and visit Agadir in Morocco on various occasions.
Didn't I do that the last time?
I don't think so. You mentioned that water was collected from Agadir.
I'm thinking of the Passion Boat.
No, did that go to Agadir? I thought that went to La Linea.
Now, there was a little bit of... I don't know why, but... well, I do know why. I think it was because they wanted the African Star.
Ah.
And that there was excuses from pilots that that they would go and fly to one of the aerodromes either on North Africa or in the I think it was the islands off in the North Atlantic there. I'm trying to think of which one it was.
Would it be the Azores?
Yes, it was the Azores, and. The idea was that if you drop down there and stay for a short time, you qualified for this particular medal. And one funny story that we heard that came back while we were at the Azores was that when they'd left the aircraft, they'd left the ladder in place. And when they went back into the aircraft, they found pink mice. And of course, this was not a good thing for the aircraft at all, so they had to seal it off and fumigate it to make sure that there was no live little beasties aboard. But whether it was something that had just been put around as a story, I have no idea. But that was one of the comments that we got back. And, of course, when they went to the North African side, then invariably it would be those that were coming from the Mediterranean, not from the North Atlantic.
Now, I think looking across, you could probably see...
You could,
the
yes.
other side. You could see Tangier.
I could get so far towards Europa Point, but it was constrained. You couldn't go much further than the... the cemetery, I think. You could go so far past Alameda Gardens, which is gone now, of course, and the cemetery was on the right-hand side, and beyond that you weren't allowed. But you could see, just faintly, the coastline, but I never spent much time there at all.
Were you interested in going to Morocco yourself? Would you have gone if the chance had come up?
I had no desire to. The only time that I offered to do anything in that respect was that a crew that I'd seen quite a while on our squadron, because we're losing aircraft and crews, I sort of took an attached to them, and they were lost in the Med. And they were going to send out... an aircraft to see if they could find him, the dinghy or something like that. And I offered to fly with them if they would allow me, but it was refused.
Why were you so interested in that particular crew? What was it that attracted you to them?
I think it was the experience of seeing what actually, what process they went. And I can only assume that it was just eyeball looking for them. Mm. And so I thought if another... I don't know, I was wearing glasses, but I thought of probably another pair of eyes. There's only the side window, so there'd be the pilot and co-pilot and probably a navigator with them. But I thought I could relieve them or try and look over the shoulders or something. But I wasn't allowed. Mm.
You mentioned
thinking that about it was common sense that I wasn't allowed.
Yes.
No more.
You mentioned in March 1943 you had a board. Was this a board for being promoted to leading aircraftsman?
It was. Mm. I wasn't given any warning, so I was just simply taken into what would be like the the duty office, which was a hut, and they said, well, we've seen your records of late, and it's time we ought to give you a board, see what you've what level you've got to. And I was given a whole series of miscellaneous questions, and I had to respond more or less straight away. And this lasted for about half an hour. It wasn't so long. And apparently I satisfied their need, and I was promoted then from AC1, which I'd passed out from Padgate. I never got AC2 out of there. Most of them did. So, but this was because I was with a squadron of regular staff, and so therefore I was still a junior in that respect. And of course it changed my daily pay, which was 6 shillings a day for an AC1, and it became 6 and 6 pence for an LAC. Now, as I've said before, half of that money went to my mother, so she would get a slight increase as well.
So you got threepence.
I've got threepence.
Yeah. And did it bring any change in your range of duties or responsibilities?
No change at all. It was just go as you were before. No, I wasn't given any more responsibility.
How many officers were there on the board? Do you remember?
Oh, it wasn't an officer. I think it was a sergeant.
Yes.
I wasn't taking much notice. I knew him, but I didn't know his name.
Yeah.
And it was just a bolt out of the blue.
Mm. Do you remember any of the questions that were put to you?
No, not now. Mm. No.
Do you remember if they were mainly technical questions?
Oh, they're all technical. Nothing to do with personal. Mm. It was all about the aircraft itself and what would you do in certain circumstances. Mm. And I just answered ad lib as I am doing now.
Mm. You mentioned another thing, an aircraft F being lost, and the drowning of a pilot officer Moon in April. Do you remember anything about him or about that particular?
He was a man that had stayed with us from the beginning, and he came out from. And so he was noticed, and he was a gentleman, and so were the crew. The odd times that they never spoke to you, so you know, but you can tell a courtesy person, acknowledge you at least. Most of them just walked straight past you.
Do you know what happened, why the aircraft was lost?
No. I don't think he ever got found either.
Mm. What about the other members of the crew? Were they saved?
That, again, I don't know. Mm. No, there were so many aircraft, unfortunately, were lost.
You do mention also another officer whose life was saved, a flying officer, Nicholson.
Yes. There's not much I can add. Mm. It was just hearsay that I got to know that he'd been saved. Mm. But I don't think there's anything I can add. I've just probably put it down at that time. That this is, you know, something to rejoice for.
Right.
Because I was concerned. I was making the life-saving equipment, and therefore
yes.
I was trying to keep a check on what was happening with the squadron. Mm. And, of course, there was the thought that something could go wrong. Because there was one report came back, and one of the air crew said that when they came to try and operate the manual lever to operate the dinghy, it was jammed, and it didn't operate. But anyway, it inflated itself because he was there to tell me, and he was saved. But Now, this made me more concerned because one thing I hadn't been doing was to make sure that the bound cable was free to move. And so in the past, I'd always assumed that, took on this and the other end would move. So I did make a point then of every time I disconnected it that I pulled this, and then, of course, I had to go back on the main plane to pull it back again, make sure it got all the travel. And it usually worked quite freely. So what happened there, I don't know. Whether the aircraft had bent itself a little bit or not, I don't know.
Yes, if the aircraft had been deformed, then presumably any cable could jam, couldn't it?
Quite so. But there again, it's got a big sleeve on it, so it should have taken some impact.
Yes.
But anyway, it didn't apparently, so to accept his word.
But the dinghy had inflated anyway.
Yes,
because the water got into contact with the
charge. Yes, there's self-igniting firing, whatever it is. I can only assume a chemical dissolved and
set it off,
and the spring loading would set the plunger into the gas bottle.
How long would it take for a dinghy to inflate then when that happened? Would that be a matter of seconds or
minutes? No, it's a slow process. I've seen them fired. In fact, one of the aircrew demanded that we should have that one done on an aircraft. And so, and this caused me a bit of concern. And of course, the whole squadron ground crew was watching as well. And when he pulled it, then of course the nacelle cover flew off, as it should do, and the dinghy itself just sort of unrolled downwards on the main plane. Now, appreciate this is stood in on an airfield, and therefore the slope of the main plane was such that that's what it would do normally. And as it rolled down, then you could see it slowly blowing up, and then it would unfold the other way. It had two folds from the middle. So the full length unrolled, then you had it unfold again, two sides. And you could see the ballooning effect. And, of course, the bottle itself was steaming, and this is with the probably a little bit of the escape gas, which I knew full well, because the bottles that were on the dinghies were those that were suitable for the North Sea and the North Atlantic. Whereas if you were going into the Mediterranean, then there was too much CO2 liquid in them, and it could overblow and burst.
Yeah, a matter of too much pressure.
Yes, too much. Now, there is a pressure release valve on them. Now, whether this would cope or not, and it was never put to a test, it was just like a thick rubber ring, and this would bell out and just release the excess pressure. And it blew up tight, and my eyes were running with tears, thankfully.
Because you'd proved that it worked?
Proved that it worked.
And presumably this rubber ring, this would be a sort of escape valve?
Yes. Well, it was where you inflated it by hand.
Right.
It was a two-way device.
Two-way valve, so you could put CO2 in.
You had a pair of bellows, which of course were packed.
Right.
And you had to unravel this, and you connected onto a spout, more or less, click-on device. And mostly with hands, just a small bellows, and you could inflate them. And it usually went down, I understand, at night time when the air cooled off. And it tended to expand in the daylight, and when it was hot, it used to then release excess gas. But of course, then you had to recharge it again.
Put extra in.
For the air at night time. And so it was used.
You mentioned another thing, that a crew that were in the sea were collected by some Spanish fishermen, and that they would then have to pay £100 each, or £100
That's
each
right.
to be paid for them.
Yes.
Was that a formal arrangement? Or
yes,
was it?
The Gibraltar authorities were quite prepared to buy back the any servicemen. And the same thing happened, of course, if you overstayed your 24-hour pass when they went on the Passion Boat, which I mentioned the other week